This is Rachelix After Hours.
We're back with good quality microphones and lifters of two different flavours, as usual in Rack Addicts After Hours Towers. Never said it that way before. Whatever, it's episode 136, and it's Ben and Pete, the classic crew. What have you been doing the past week, Pete?
Well, I can't actually go into too much detail about what I have actually been doing, but
super
I can
secret.
Talk around the periphery. So, I have or had a requirement to rescue some 30-year-old tracks from various tape mediums.
Purgatory.
Yes. So, I had some real fun and games, initially with tape cassettes.
Classic, yes.
And my problem was finding a functional cassette player.
I know where it is. It's in my house.
The one I gave. Well, that's not the problem. I have got a massive selection of some of which are really high end. So I started off trying to use a Tascam 112 Mark II,
right?
Or should I say a 112 Mark II, or what would you say?
However you like.
However you would like. A 112 Mark II, which is a rack mount, full-on professional cassette deck. And alas, that one wouldn't play. Well, it sort of would play for a little bit, and then it sort of...
just gave up.
Yes.
Weird.
So luckily, that is fully serviceable, and I've started that procedure, but I've got spares that I need to get for it. Mm-hmm. So then I resorted to a Sony hi-fi unit that was, again, 19-inch, but you know the sort of thing that you'd stack up and you'd have your radio and then you would have your cassette deck, CD player, etc.
Yep, I know the styling.
All in separates. And neither of the... Well, this was a double cassette deck and neither of those functioned at all.
Neither half.
It wouldn't even rewind or fast forward or anything at all. The problem being is that both those units have spent 20 years in the loft in my garage. Mm. So they've been going ultra cold in the winter, ultra hot in the summer. So it's you know, they're most probably highly stressed, you know, that hot, cold.
Seasonal fluctuations, indeed.
Yes, exactly. So eventually I had to resort to a small child's kind of mini ghetto blaster thing that used to be my daughter's when she was about 8.
Mm.
And it had a headphone socket. And even that was touch and go.
Yeah, so, but you made it in the end.
Well, sort of. Just for now, I managed to stream off some of the cassette audio and run it into Cubase and convert it, obviously, from the analog into WAV format. But it was, yes, it was interesting. Mm. I will service the Tascam and utilize that, even just for the fact that when I was looking at them on eBay, they're going for something like 500 quid each.
Oof. Not bad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much they would have been new. Maybe around that price, maybe a little bit more originally, but we're talking 20, 30 years ago or whenever. Yeah. I don't know how old this thing is. I don't know how long I've had it even. Anyway, and then that led on to finding a master tape, which is connected to this project. And so I've retrieved that and it's a full 2-inch.
Let me do the sound effects of me picking it up. It's only just a one-handed job, but no, gotta have two hands on this thing. What a majestic artifact I hold in my hands here. Breathes the air again. Tell us about it while I'm leafing through.
Well, that is a 2-inch master tape of a track that I recorded. Well, I didn't record it. It was recorded in a 24-track studio somewhere around the end of the 1980s. I initially put the idea together in my little, whatever it was at the time, I think it was an 8-track reel-to-reel system with some Simpty going on and some other automation and an Atari ST running Cubase, which at the time could only handle MIDI and nothing else.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole system sort of unified. So you would have various instruments being triggered by MIDI and then maybe some of the live stuff on the half-inch 8-track. And I thought, of course, I've got to take this into a 24-track. And so handed it over to the engineers at the 24-track that we hired out and let them get on with it. And didn't quite work out. If even as much as I was trying to direct them and instruct them on what I wanted to achieve, they still exerted their influence, let's say, over the track. So it didn't really turn out how I wanted it to go. And frankly, it got abandoned. But, you know, these things happen. I'm sure lots of things get recorded and never see the light of day. But there is a potential project which might allow me to resurrect it. And unfortunately, I just can't talk about it.
Yeah.
But there
Maybe
you go.
Maybe one day, If nothing definitely happens, then you can tell your brilliant story of the past week or two.
Yes, can't wait.
Delicious. Any more tales from your week?
And that was mostly it, and it's taken up the whole week because of all this frantic digging around in lofts and digging around for bits and pieces. And then I got a little too deep into the maintenance of the Tascam cassette deck. And luckily for me, there are many YouTube videos of people servicing them. It seems the issue that I'm experiencing is rather common. So it's generally issues with pinch rollers, belt drives, and various motors and gears that all deteriorate as these things get older. In fact, some of these deteriorate without them even running. There's a certain lubricant that they were using at the time.
Turn into some weird powder or something horrible.
Yeah, it sort of does something really strange to the gear mechanisms that are, I don't know, they're sort of, I don't know if they're Teflon or some sort of plastic gears, but particular ones in there have got a habit of disintegrating for no apparent reason other than they've been attacked by this lubricant.
Yeah.
Yes, so I'm getting to grips with how you maintain cassette drives, or certainly cassette drive mechanisms. And luckily, although the parts aren't available from Tascam, there are third parties who are constructing them. I don't know if they're 3D printing them or what, but there seems to be quite a fraternity of people who still use these products.
Good to know. You're in safe hands on the internet.
Well, I haven't had the need to use a cassette tape in anger for 20, 25 years.
I
can't remember.
There's all the people these days going, oh, I want a bit of retro in my life. So they're going back to find some cassette or tape action of some kind.
Yeah, you can certainly hear it when you start, all the hissing, all the wow and flutter if the tape is a bit stretched. I mean, it's rather excruciating, if you ask me.
It's all vibe. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's vibe, is it? Yeah, I can imagine how people strive to get that tape sound through some digital pedal or
warmth
effect.
Yeah, that's what you need.
No, I'm sure it's fine if you're using really high-end analog equipment, but when you're sort of scratching around and using really substandard stuff, you really notice it. Anyway, that was my week.
Mine starts with a bit of a downer. Unfortunately, you know my medium format camera?
Yes.
The shutter's gone bust on it. Oh! I don't know in what capacity, because I honestly don't know how to start troubleshooting it. I need to dig around on the internet a lot, but I can't get it to fire properly. I don't know if it's not cocking the shutter or if it's where we're going wrong.
But it would be a mechanical fault.
Mechanical fault? There's nothing digital to go wrong. So I'm sure with the right knowledge and maybe a few tools and the right specific oils and a lot of lighter fluid, I'm sure I can resurrect it. Because I do have 4 or 5 rolls of 120 film that still need to be used. So I'm not going to let it go.
Did you buy it privately?
eBay.
Okay. But was it a private seller or a...
Yeah, it wasn't a...
Yeah, so there's no return.
Warranty.
There's no...
Yeah, there is on... Well, there was a 4 or 5 month secondhand warranty on my 35mm camera, but nothing went wrong with that one.
Fair enough. I'm sure there'll be a video or something that you could watch. There will be plenty of...
Really common camera, so I'm sure I'll be okay.
As it's mechanical, you should be able to spot it visually.
I hope so. We'll see. We shall see. I shall update if I make any progress on there. But the other bit has been a rabbit hole that I've fallen down. So I'm going to wind back a little and approach it from a different angle. So I'm going to fish around in my pocket. Remember this?
Yes.
I've upgraded. By this, listeners, I held up the little notebook, the Traveller's Journal, passport-sized. Pulled that out of my pocket. I've upgraded to the larger model.
The larger format.
Medium format notebooking. That's what we're doing now. So this one, mostly because there's a weekly calendar thing, so you can have a whole week on the double spread. That was the reason. The notebook is not the thing that I've rabbit-holed on. What's happened is the Fisher Space Pen that I've probably spoken about before, and its wonderful brassiness. As beautiful an object as it may be, I have become frustrated with the refills. So, the Fisher Space Pen's USP, I suppose, which I don't actually care about, is these pressurized ink refills. Oh yes, it can write upside down, underwater, on greasy surfaces, because of course I want to write messages on the greasy baking paper that I just baked croissants on. I don't know. Either way, it's a ballpoint pen, and it is amazing that it always begins writing as soon as you start. There's none of that, you know, when you have to try and get one going. There's none of that. But I think that pressurization is responsible for sometimes a little extra bit of ink seeps out over some amount of time. So the next time you go to write, there's a giant splodge on it, which then will, in a notebook that folds in half, it'll print onto the other page, it'll smudge everywhere, and it's this really gooey, viscous ink that it's dry. It's round the twist, I have found myself. So I thought, I really like fineliners. They're nice to write with. They're thin and precise. They don't smudge as long as you give them that, you know, second they need to dry. I'll be fine. But I'm not going to be content with using any old fine liner. Who'd you take me for? Brass addict of such something. I don't know. I like brass. I want a brass fine liner, damn it. I can't find one. I don't think they exist. So I had to turn to Reddit and the pen nerds of r/pens to try and fix my problem. Pen nerds will know that there are certain styles of refill made by loads of brands, and certain styles will work with certain pens. Certain brands make fineliner refills. I thought, ooh, we're off to a winner here. But I can't find a brass capped pen with an O-ring that will accept fineliner refill.
Oh dear.
Apart from this one I found on Etsy for, guess how much money, Pete?
$200.
No, it's not that bad, but it's still a lot of money. It's 80 quid. Yeah.
So could your splodgy problem, your seepage, your pen seepage,
yes,
could it be something to do with the extreme weather we've been having?
No, it's always happened.
Okay,
unfortunately.
So you're not getting extra viscosity.
No, there isn't any extra seasonal discharge. No, and because it's a small pen and I can't fish a space pen fine liner. That's not a solution, alas. Unfortunately, I could probably eventually convince myself to spend 80 quid on a handmade brass fine liner on Etsy, but I'll show it to you because it's not very inspiring. Though it is brass and it would, you know, weather and age nicely. The issue with fine liners is they dry really quickly, and there is one for about 50-60 pounds, but it doesn't have an O-ring in the cap, so it wouldn't solve that drying problem. Okay, here it is. It's just a rather uninspiring cylinder.
Yes, it's hard to tell from the photograph. You'd really need to sort of hold it in your hand. If you're going to spend that sort of money, you need to be able to fondle it, as we said last week.
Yeah, I would love to fondle it. And I mean, I'm sure it's adequate, and I'm sure it feels fine to a certain extent. Yeah, I did find... Actually, this is quite an interesting aside. Let me see if I can find this website again. Okay, so I found, I assume, a one-man band, independent pen maker, handmade pens, and I browsed... as I do, and ooh, that's a rather elegant and lovely looking brass mechanical pencil. Cool, like the look of that. Classic, brass, brilliant. Maybe the guy does a pen. Maybe it does the right refills. Alas, no. The only pen that would take the right refill is called the Traveller Pen. It's rather lovely, but it's only stainless steel. I emailed the guy, I went, why? Why no brass one? Apparently the mechanism it uses wouldn't be compatible with the patina that you get on brass. It would stop the smooth operation. And he said he might make a different brass thing anyway. Whatever. I haven't found one. But this company that I'm talking about is Nicholas Hemingway, which you might recognize the name. Are you thinking the Hemingway I'm thinking of?
Yes.
And in fact, yes, related to Ernest Hemingway. So Nicholas Hemingway's family can be directly traced back to about 1400 AD. His American side of the family emigrated to the US from Sheffield in 1860 and became the famous literary branch of the family that led to the birth of Ernest Hemingway. The other half of the family stayed in Yorkshire. So kind of cool. And now one of them is making pens that are quite exquisite, but not brass enough for this brass man. I think I found where this little obsession came from. Did you watch the tested video? It was a little Adam Savage show and tell where they sent him a prototype, well, a company called Maker's Cabinet sent him a prototype pencil. Did you watch that one?
I may have done, but I've watched so many tested videos.
They roll into one.
Yes, it's all a blur.
Yeah, so this one is a really nice and with a quite fine mechanism, a brass holder for your traditional six-sided wooden pencil. And I was all thinking about brass, and I don't use pencils really, so it's just something nice to look at at the moment, but I'm going to keep looking. So that's been my week. A broken camera, and I've not managed to find the pencil I want, or the pencil, the fine liner I want. Big sad. So we shall move on to some synth news, because that's what we want here, and there are three-ish things that I've got for you. One will be for you 1U modular people. There's a new player that you might like if you're into your fancy colours and your PCB faceplates and such. Faded Instruments. They have the Faded Toolbox Candy range, or candy coloured range. The range has a mult, obviously, dual switches with mutes, an attenuator mixer, dual attenuator, and a patch bay. Those are all passive ones. And then you've got one slightly more interesting one, which is called the Jangler, which is, since it's a PCB panel, it's got etched capacitive touch bits, so you can make and break and mangle connections with your sweaty fingers. But go and have a look. Faded Instruments, they've got some demos on YouTube, but they are a nice break from the silver and black. You've got some fancy colours and silly designs. We like it. And they're all quite affordable in the kind of 30 euros range of things. Nextly, we go to Noise Engineering with two new additions to the Versio area, and both of which I think are quite cool for a couple of reasons that I'll give into. So, Polydactyl Versio is the newest one. Of course, a software or firmware upgrade or alternative firmware if you already have a Versio module. This guy is a multiband dynamics processor and saturator, so more options at last for the end-of-chain mastering-y style stuff. So, you have multiband saturation, noise gate, limiting as a sort of colouring dynamics something. It's kind of cool. Similarly, we have the slightly narrower multi-firmware option, which is Legio, not Versio. There are three of them at the moment, but the latest one is TIMP Legio, T-Y-M-P, which is a percussion thing. You've got three modes, some stuff, some bits and pieces, some whatever. You know, there's lots of digital percussion around. But what's really cool about this one is it has a stereo audio pass-through, which will do your side-chain ducking stuff, should you so want it. But it's interesting to find that on the percussion voice. But I like that. That's a really cool idea. Nice one, Noise Engineering. So you can load up that firmware if you have a Legio module. There we be. Synth News, a quick one.
I was going to mention that I have had a really good go on the new Oberheim, the OBX8.
Oh, it's appeared in the shop, has it?
Yes, it has.
Right, tell us everything. I haven't been paying any attention at all, so I really just don't even remember what it looks like. So I'm going to look it up while you tell us about it.
Right. Well, we got one mounted and set up on display. Obviously, we had a right good go on it.
Ooh, but you
and
did.
It's quite impressive. I mean, I know it's expensive and there are other things that can do similar, which I'll mention in a second.
4,800 big ones for
yes.
those of you thinking about it.
I was much more impressed with it than I was with the Prophet 5 / Prophet 10.
Big disappointment when that one came in, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's not so much disappointment in respect to the instrument itself, it's disappointment in how expensive it is in respect to
its capability.
Yes. But the Oberheim is a bigger, more impressive physically, and it's just got some subtle things in there that just make it a lot better. One thing, it's got stereo output.
Yay, that's what you want.
But if anyone's particularly interested, the YouTube channel, which we have mentioned before, Starsky Car, did a really good shootout with the OBX8 versus the OB6.
Oh, yeah, cool.
And so he was able to almost match the sounds identically, and he said, obviously you're hearing it on YouTube, it's all compressed, but he's giving a running commentary, and he said it is extremely close. He did say that the more time he spent with the OBX8, the more he was drawn to it. There are certain subtleties. When he had both instruments very similar, there was just an extra little bit of quality in the OBX8, but you would expect that because it's nearly double the price.
Yeah.
And the overarching thing is that they can be so close. So it sort of vindicates what I've been saying to a lot of customers that, you know, if you want that Oberheim sound and you haven't got a massive, massive budget, the OB6 is a really good proposition.
Yeah, it was probably still is my favourite polysynth, to be honest. It was always my favourite to play on in the shop, and I don't know that anything really ever toppled it while I was there.
If I had the money, I would certainly grab an OBX8.
You reckon?
But at the same time, I could get two really good synths for the same price. You could get an OB6 and a Prophet 6 for the same money.
Yeah, or if you wanted to go a bit weird and left field, I think OB6 and a Matriarch. That would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's a combination of things that you can get. But as a physical thing, it is really quite nice.
Awesome.
Again, very faithful to the 1970 / 1980 time period. So no effects.
Yep, it's got those wonderful clickety-clackety buttons that I like so much.
But they have got one little concession. There's a really little, tiny little OLED.
I was just looking at that.
And there's a lot more parameters that you can access through it. So
makes it a little bit less remember button combination-y.
Yeah.
Bit quality of life there.
The setup is slightly, how did he describe it on the YouTube video? He basically said that a more modern synth like an OB6 would make a lot more sense to most people.
Right.
There are certain things that he felt that they could have added without too much difficulty and weren't there. On the whole, yes, it's very nice, but it's a combination of, you know, how good is it versus how much it costs. But there you go. I've seen one. I've touched it. I liked it. I won't be buying one.
Mm.
Someone wants to give me one as a present, I'll be most happy to receive it. But other than that, I can just...
Absolute glowing review in comparison to the old Prophet 5.
Yeah, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with the Prophet 5. But just think they could do them a little bit cheaper, possibly. But I don't know. I don't know the actual ins and outs of the economics of building them. But looking at what other synth manufacturers can do, I just believe that they charge the numbers they do because they can, because it's one of these reissues.
Yeah, much like the Model D reissue as well.
Yes, and they sold very well, even at the reasonably extortionate price they came out.
Is this a limited run at all, or they just...
I'm not aware of that. I think it is
like
a product.
Prophet 5
and
all that.
Yeah,
they're... Cool. Well, it's good to see Oberheim stuff in reach, or in the world in some form anyway.
You often wonder whether they're going to actually bring the Two Voice back.
Yeah, a really early video that made me think, ooh, actually, synths are really cool, was a G4 software video about the Oberheim 8 Voice, which had a just brilliant demo track, as well as it being an amazing demo of it, because obviously they were working on their plugin, but that's a brilliant video, and everybody should go and watch it right now. G4 software, Oberheim 8 Voice, massive thing.
Mm.
Yeah, because there was the 4 Voice, and you could just get the big expander, which is just 4 SEMs in a big blob.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Obviously yet to see a, whatever the Behringer thing's called.
Oh, the pink thing. Yeah, the DFAM fake.
No, the OBX.
One? Oh, that one.
UBX8 or whatever they're going to call it.
Yeah, because there was the keyboard one, and then there was also that module that still hasn't
a surface
appeared.
At all. No, yeah. No, the keyboard version is imminent.
Ooh, small news. The Polycinematic, that cool 8-voice module digital boy.
Yeah.
There's a limited edition dark mode without the slightly strange pink and purple colour scheme if you're really put off by that.
Mm.
I guess they had enough people going, please make a different panel, so, I don't like
all black?
Blacks and greys and whites, so it's quite classy. Monochromatic.
I might have to invest.
Mm. But yes, limited edition, so get on it. What are they called? I've forgotten.
Polycinematic.
I mean the company. Nobula. Them's the boys. Nobula. Yeah. Yeah, so... Yeah, let me get a picture so you can have a look at its rather nice faceplate. Yeah, I mean, I'd much prefer that than the weird pink
and
purple.
Is it the same sort of money, or they've decided they can ramp it up because it's a limited edition?
Find out.
As they tend to do, these people.
Okay, so Juno have the original one, 327.99, rubber dub 320. Oh, they've called it dark mode.
And it's just cosmetic?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. Well, you can pre-order it from foundsound.com.au, but that's not that useful.
Well, it's a UK company.
Is it?
Yeah, sure. It is.
Yeah, no sign of the pre-order button anywhere. Strange, but we'll see.
I could always email them directly, can I?
Yeah.
Just go, oi!
Oi!
When's this going to be available?
I did actually bid on eBay on an IntelliGel palette.
Ooh.
I lost, but intention was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is the second coming, or the third, or the fourth even.
It might be the third. This would be, if you think, if starting again means I have to have completely culled everything to begin again, then yes, the second one. But there was another... There were two distinct phases in the previous modular thing, so I'll call this round three. But I do have, of course, a modular grid thing, because of course I've got a modular grid in the back of my brain at all times. That's how it works. So the current plan would be a 62, 64 HP 6U kind of thing, and basically just a box of ambient. So 2 HP Bell, Turing machine, quantizer, 2 radio musicses, crush delay, few multi-effects things. So it'd be I've got a Pico DSP in there. I've got a pip slope for a little bit of modulation and a Batumi, as well as the dope mini synth voice that you just picked up. Disting EX for multi-purpose, but most of the time for the multi-sample piano stuff. That's kind of knocking around my head at the moment. Maybe. Anyway, you know what? It's time to round it off with the classic miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. And if you want to know what Pete's been watching on YouTube this week, I'm afraid you're going to have to pay the toll. And the toll is, if you are a wonderful human being who's listening via the magic of Apple Music or Apple Podcasts or whatever the service is called, because I really don't know, I listen on Spotify. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please give us a review. Please be honest, because we just want feedback. We want to do better. But yeah, if you are listening on a podcasting service that supports ratings and reviews, please drop us a line. We'd love to know. And here we are, Pete. What YouTube have you been chewing on?
Right, this week I've been watching a channel called, and it's all one word, So Crispy Media.
So Crispy Media, ooh. That rings a bell for some reason, I don't know why.
Yeah, these guys seem to do lots of things that involve computer graphics in the respect of gaming, films, and VR. And they do quite an eclectic range of subjects. And the one that particularly caught my eye was End of Original Art, AI Changes These Classic Movies. So they basically were explaining what they could do with some of this kind of DALL-E 2 type of technology in respect to taking a classic movie and doing things with it. One of those kind of, you know, this, not a documentary as such, but one of those ones that's commenting, saying, is AI going to come in and make all the graphic artists unemployed because you can just type some text in and it'll all just happen. So that one caught my eye, but there's a whole range of very interesting topics that all seem to relate to that type of subject. So other titles are We Became Video Game Characters, Creating Trapped in a Video Game, Trapped in a First Person Video Game, so there's a lot of themes like that. That was another video. Making Mr. Beast's Squid Game in 10 Days. Trapped in a Video Game seems to be a constant theme with a lot of the videos. The Future of CGI, so again, sort of commentary on that type of thing. Making Drawings Come to Life, Creating Stick Figure War. So they're using motion capture, but they're using the motion capture and applying it to stick figures.
Yeah, 2D. That's quite interesting. Not seen that before.
So yeah, lots of things. 1 million gold play buttons. Okay, that's when they got to 1 million followers or supporters. And there is a one, jumping from a plane for YouTube. So that looks like an actual genuine, unless they're using some very fancy CGI for that one. But yeah, just a range of interesting videos that feature that type of thing. I also note that they haven't done anything in quite some time. So even that video, that video I mentioned, the first one was 2 weeks ago, then the previous one was 3 months, and then before that was a year, and then before that it was 2 years. So they don't make a hell of a lot of videos on this particular channel, but I believe they run several other channels as well. So
yeah, I guess as their production value gets more ambitious, they just take a bit longer to cook these up.
Yeah, certainly that one I watch, which runs for only 9 minutes 41 seconds, but there was quite a lot of work. It wasn't just a casual video, so they're very professional. So basically, that is my multimedia recommendation for this week, the YouTube channel, all one word, So Crispy Media, and that's spelled SOKRISPYMEDIA.
Those are the ones. Wonderful stuff. Mine can be found on YouTube, but Spotify or whatever music service you like, it is a single, and well, I guess it's quite a pop music single because it's really, really short. 2 minutes and 11 seconds. Don't think I've heard a song that short in a very long time. But this is Devon Cole, and the song is Witch, with dots in between all the letters, W-I-T-C-H. What a tune. Just popped up on the YouTube homepage for no apparent relation to anything else I had been watching, but it's a jam. Pop music. I think she mostly does some kind of singer-songwritery type stuff, and there's not a huge back catalogue that I've found to chew on, but this is a banger. Devon Cole, Witch. No matter what kind of music you like, I don't think you could not like it. It's great. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, and of course, thank you for leaving a review and a rating if your podcast platform supports it. You've been listening to Rack Addicts After Hours, and we hope that you tune in for the next episode. Farewell!